and good morning to you. I'm Ellen Speer, and this is Morning Drive. Thank you so much for tuning in. I have two very special guests this morning. We're going to be talking about artists who have always held up a mirror to what's going on in the world, and especially when there is foment and chaos. And so we'll be talking about what artists are doing, what the responsibility of artists is, of arts organizations, and related topics. With me first is Amy Brentano. She's the producing artistic director of The Foundry and West Stockbridge, and she has directed for Berkshire Theatre Group, worked as a playwright with the Playwright Mentoring Project at Barrington Stage, and as a teaching artist at the Wham Theatre, and co-artistic director for Bizarre Productions in the Berkshires. In New York City, she was artistic director of Red Earth Ensemble, a member of Teatron Theatre Company, where she performed at La Mama, etc., performed at Theatre for a New City, and studied with Anne Bogart, Mary Overly, and Spalding Gray at NYU Tisch School of the Arts. Welcome, Amy. Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for inviting me.
And also with us is David Atkins. He's performed in numerous productions at Berkshire Theatre Group over the past 30 years and collaborated with Isadora Wolf to direct A Christmas Carol last holiday season. Hope you caught that. As Artistic Director of Education and Training, David has taught and coached and directed numerous productions and project. He appeared this season in Abe Lincoln in Illinois, directed by David Auburn. He's worked on and off Broadway in major resident theaters across the country and guest starred in all of my favorite television programs, including New Amsterdam, Madam Secretary, Evil, Homeland, Blacklist, The Good Wife, Elementary, The Americans, Happy-ish Without a Trace, Law and Order, all kinds of Law and Order, Blackjack, and the Ben Franklin miniseries on PBS. Welcome, David. Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks so much. I'm very happy to be here.
So let's talk about artists. Given the current situation, Amy, start with you. What are you seeing as the artistic response that's happening in the world, to, if any?
That's a
it's a question that's like this big, right?
What is the artistic response?
Are you seeing any artists responding to chaos, either in their what they're presenting on stage, how they're programming, visual arts that you see, anything like that?
Absolutely. I think there's a tremendous response. I mean, we're all trying very much not to be afraid of censorship, losing our independence, losing our funding, losing the ability to speak out and use our voice for the things that we represent. And I say we very broadly. The Foundry's in a unique situation that we started as a nonprofit and we remain a nonprofit right now. And we were thinking about going for a 501c3, but I pushed pause on that button because at this moment we're so fiercely independent that we support ourselves with the help of patrons and sponsorships from businesses. And so we can book these artists who are really speaking out and representing communities that they come from and speaking to issues, but also speaking to try to create dialogue with audiences to bring them together.
So it gives you a degree of freedom. And David, how about you? What are you seeing?
Well, I'm very much right now in the education world. We just did a production of Matilda at Berkshire Theatre Group, and we had 56 kids there. And I will honestly say that when I'm looking at programming for our kids, I'm not thinking about the turbulent times so much. What I'm looking for are the stories that these kids the stories I would like them to be immersed in that have really positive life lessons that will carry them as they grow and get older into times where there might be turbulent times. It's really a teaching lesson. I know that there's the nature of storytelling comes out of the cultural narrative that continues to change all the time. Mm-hmm. So it kind of began, you know, you look at COVID hitting.
Right.
The response for that was a lot of theaters shut down.
Yeah, yeah.
Kate McGuire did a play during that time. She did it outdoors, and it was Godspell, which, you know, has its own positive messages.
Yeah.
Then you have cultural responses to, you know, AI is now coming to the forefront, and there we're seeing responses to that. And now we have the turbulent times that everyone's talking about, and it's interesting to see what is going to happen, because what I see is a lot of people in a way kind of waiting tentatively to see where we are. And
let me stop you there. Amy, do you agree with that? Are you guys waiting to see where we are?
Oh, no, we're putting our foot on the accelerator.
And in what way?
Well, our mission has always been to give platform to voices that are often unheard. In particular, there's a demographic in the Berkshires that we can't deny. It's mostly older, leaning somewhat left liberal white audiences. And the reason that we started the Foundry was because I wanted a space that spoke to more than just that audience, because they have a tremendous amount of material to go and see. And so we've always promoted LGBTQ plus artists. We've always had BIPOC artists. We've always had young and older, bringing intergenerational audiences together, people crossing cultural divides in creating dialogue. And so we've always done that. But now,
yeah,
it's full press forward year-round.
Well, let me ask you, because the audiences that you addressed, and I'll ask you the same question, David, mm-hmm. the audiences that you just addressed are the ones that are kind of have a big red bullseye on their faces. Do you find that artists are a little afraid to identify as who they are in this environment? Is it holding back artistically at all?
No.
In a word. Okay.
You know, we're pulling in. It depends. I don't even feel like, you know, we have a lot of touring and local artists. We support emerging artists in the Berkshires. And I don't feel like that. I think that larger organizations have to be, are treading lightly, have to be somewhat careful. When you see what happens at the Kennedy Center, it comes down. We're just a scrappy little black box.
There you go. So, David, what do you think?
Well, I don't think artists, most of the artists I know do not hold back. I think we're all, we're stepping into what feels like dangerous times. I think different organizations have to make different choices. I know that Kate McGuire this year was very much interested in telling, you know, stories of humanness, what it means to be human, and how our identities, we question our identities and we can embrace them and continue to move forward in turbulent times. But are we necessarily doing a play that's speaking absolutely directly mm-hmm. to the political culture that's right in front of our face? Maybe not directly, but all art is revolutionary.
Yeah, and that's usually not the artistic response to be in your face particularly. Give me an example of one of the things that you've programmed this year that audiences can expect that fits that definition.
We're looking very much at we have two plays, well, three plays, actually, that really look at identity. The first is The Elephant Man, which very much talks, you know, it's a man who's deformed, if you don't know the play. He's disfigured, and how he is treated in the world, and yet his human resilience is towering. And we also have Ari Stachel, who's coming later in the season. And, you know, he questioned his identity growing up as a kid and his Jewishness. And it later became his superpower mm-hmm. and how he succeeded in the world. So those are two examples of looking at identity without hitting audiences in the face with some of the topics that we're confronted with. And so many artists would love to just throw it out there.
Yeah, I'm sure. Amy, your folks are throwing it out there, aren't they?
I mean, not all of them. I mean, you know, we have such a variety. First of all, we're so multidisciplinary, so we do have music, and that's a great way to bridge audiences. But we have more controversial things. We're very much hoping that we can get Karen Finley to come and speak hopefully this summer, but maybe in the fall, she's doing a book tour on her book, and she was, you know, Karen Finley and Robert Mapplethorpe versus the NEA. I mean, she's out there kicking, and she's still in your face. But we also have, like, sweeter, lovelier things that catch you off guard and make you think and make you want to talk to the person sitting next to you, like something called A Eulogy for Roman. It's a solo piece. It's about a young gay man. You think that it's a eulogy, but it's really a coming-of-age story. It's funny, and it's very sweet coming up from the city. So, I mean, you can go at it in all different ways. Yeah. We also just have him downright jazz.
Sure.
Jazz brings us
together. Programming, you know, you guys are almost a year in advance, so you had a big question mark about what might or might not be happening this summer. How did you deal, if you think back in the Wayback Machine to last summer, how were you thinking about this? And I'm going to ask you that too, David.
I think that we program a little differently than a very established organization like Berkshire Theater Group, in that we don't have so much that depends on, you know, going out to get funding for blocks of things, and our we're like scrambling all the time. We're scrappy. I love that. I never want to not be scrappy. But but we do. You know, I mean, like I said, our mission was always the same. Like, for instance, last year we programmed a large chunk of our LGBTQ program representing that community during June, during Pride. This year, I'm like, screw, I mean, you know, let's let go of Pride. Let's look at year round. Let's represent all these voices year round. And it doesn't have to be in a month that's assigned to them. They're part of our, we are part of the community. So, so we're still programming some things through December now.
Yeah. How about you, David? A year last summer when you all were getting together and thinking about your education programs and about what to put on stage, scratching your head, going, what's going to be going on?
We very much, the education portion is different, I would just have to say. I mean, we have a tour, and our education program goes out to schools, and that's the Magic Treehouse Tour. Mary Pope Osborne and her husband, Will Osborne, have written these plays and these musicals, and we take them out, and they have positive messages, and Mary Pope generously donates books to all of the schools, and so every school child, you know, gets one of the books. So I'm not really worried about that, so to speak.
Yeah.
I know we will choose another play and be able to go out to the schools as we always have. And I will choose I will choose another play for our spring production and have 50 or 100 kids in it. So that's less problematic, I think, than the puzzle of figuring out a season a year in advance. I think what I was directly speaking to, where people are sitting on the sidelines, was really, I'm thinking about people wondering what's happening with funding. And what are our donors going to do? Because if our, you know, if our grants and funding goes under, then people say, well, just depend more on your donors. And what I think we're going to hear from donors is they're saying, well, we're going to wait and see what the climate is and what's happening with tariffs and all of that. So that's really what I meant by sitting on the sidelines. It raises a question for next year. Absolutely.
Yes. So you all are squeezed a little bit in that you really can't move forward. It's very difficult to make plans when everybody's waiting and seeing.
Well, I think with the wait and see, we can make plans, but we have to be ready to pivot.
Right.
And we always have a list going. I know Kate McGuire has a long list, and we have a long list of artists that she would like to work with and fit into a puzzle of a program.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you, Amy? Same.
Yeah, we're
your supporters.
I don't know if I can say that they're waiting, because we get some pretty substantial donations from individuals, even though we're not a nonprofit, who want to see this place stay where it is and support the artists that it's supporting. But because it's just a little different in that we're not doing like long theaters. So theater is my background. So it's like you're doing long rehearsals, you're paying a cast of actors, and then you're doing a longer run. We are mostly doing one or two nights of an artist. And so it's a little easier to shuffle around that programming.
I see. So you can go dark one night if you need to, and it's not the end. Well, It's not nice, but it's not the end of the world.
Right. I mean, we usually have programming every weekend, with the exception of January is the only month that we're necessarily dark for other technical reasons. But and sometimes we're Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and that's when I end up in bed on Monday.
So David, you work with children. How do children connect to this? They have to see what's going on in the world. They have to see what's going on with their caregivers or their parents. How does that affect what you're doing? Do they bring that to the auditorium?
Yes, I would say they do. They bring their lives in. I mean, and that's actually what we want with artists, is to bring their whole lives in. We do see a lot of kids. There's a lot of anxiety out there that is more prevalent than ever before. And we also have the challenge of the devices.
What do you mean? Oh.
The cell phones.
Telephones.
And so attention spans. People talk about attention spans being shorter than they used to be. So, it's a challenge. They're coming in with their problems. But the beauty of, I think, theater education is that with the instructors we have, a lot of that is dispelled fairly quickly within the rehearsal process.
What do you mean? Say more about that.
Well, for instance, we come in at, I'll never forget, the first time I went to an after-school program funded by the 21st Century, I watched one of our instructors do a little check-in with the kids, and where are you? Give a thumbs-up scale. And a lot of the thumbs, I was astonished by how many thumbs were down.
Really?
Yeah. And I found it extraordinary. And then at the end of the session, there's almost always another check-in. And most of the thumbs are back up. And I thought right then, this is part of the power of what we do.
Yeah,
They're coming in with these life experiences. They're getting ready to walk out that door back into whatever their circumstances are. And yet they've had a moment to give voice in some way in an environment that is safe and productive.
Mm-hmm. Amy, are you noticing audiences are walking in with different kinds of baggage? And is that affecting how the evening unfolds at your place?
I think so. I think they come to be in community with each other. And so they can come in dragging and then they leave, you know, clapping and shouting and saying what a magical thing it is to come to a space together with people and to be, it's a so intimate venue. It's 85 seats. So they're very close to the artists, which they may not be able to get close to in a much larger space. And so there's time for people to just commune afterwards, and the bar helps.
Thank goodness for the bar. Do you find that any of your artists are holding back or afraid or changing their programming in any way for fear that they may be over the line, whatever that line is?
No, I mean, one time we had a wonderful man, Sean Dogger. He sings sea shanties, and he came comes from Canada, and he was asking me, like, what are the politics in the room? I was like, well, it's the Berkshires. I mean, for the most
part, Republic of the Berkshires. Yeah.
At least the people who come to this venue are, you know, I don't think you have to be too terribly careful about the room. But mostly, no. I mean, mostly people know that if I'm booking them, we are curating artists, that we know what work is that they're presenting. I haven't really been completely surprised by anything.
Yeah. How about you, David, your colleague telling you about audiences? I mean, we're not into the main season quite yet.
No, I don't see that at all.
Yeah.
Artists are as fired up as ever, and from what I can see. And our audiences are very supportive. I mean, our ticket sales are great. We're hitting all of our marks, that does not seem to be a worry at all. So, though I will say, I do read the headlines myself, and I see that, you know, international travel is down 11.6%, and I know that's going to affect the Berkshires. And then I think about the tariffs, and I think, what's that going to mean for the people who are coming to the Berkshires this summer?
Yeah.
Will they, instead of seeing three shows, only see one? I mean, I start thinking in terms... I'm that's what I'm looking at and thinking about.
Yeah. How about you, Amy? Are you making Plan B, Plan C, Plan D?
Again, we're so scrappy. Yes, I mean, we pay attention to what is what particular kinds of genre of things are drawing and what aren't. But I mean, like last weekend we had a totally oversold, sold out show, and tonight we have a very small audience, and it doesn't really correlate with what exactly it is that we're doing. Yeah. Sometimes it has to do with, like, does Tanglewood have a popular artist, and are they outside? Yes, everyone in the summer wants to be outside. We tend to have more sold out audiences in the off seasons, yeah, because we're appealing to local crowds that aren't necessarily up here as tourists. But did I answer your question?
You certainly did. That and then some. I wanted to ask, you got into a little different territory, a little off topic, but it is unique in the Berkshires that there, any given night, you've got six things to choose from. So how do you, and you're working in the dark a little bit because nobody wants to go first to put their stuff out there. So as a programmer, do you care?
We don't so much, because we have, just across the spectrum, we have so many different things to offer. So we don't have one particular kind of patron or artist from, yeah, one particular demographic or socioeconomic community. It's all, we appeal, sometimes it crosses over, which is lovely, and we love to do something where we go, oh my gosh, there's so many people here from Pittsfield and so many from Great Barrington and Albany, and, you know, it just doesn't always happen like that. I mean, like, we do a Celtic singer and it sells out the first night that we put it up. Yeah. So it's very, that's the scary part about what we do, is that it's very difficult to judge what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. It just, the weather is a lot about it. We're, yeah, in the middle of North and South County, so if the weather's bad,
yeah, yeah. And David, you've got a few stages to fill on the non-education side.
Yes, yes. And I don't actually make the choices for the programming, but in terms of the other stages, I really think there's a feeling of the more the merrier, in a way. I know I don't feel that there's a competition between the, yeah, groups. We each kind of find our own little niche and are able to, you know, fill that. And it's, I think once in a while, I do remember we were running a check to make sure, we decided to do Mousetrap kind of at the last minute, and we were making sure no one else in the area was doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is that kind of you know, we do look at that, but we want all of the theaters to be doing well, because if all of the theaters are doing well, then that means something is, you know, we're all doing something right.
Yeah, yeah. Amy, do you notice that audiences, if they're predominantly from Pittsfield or predominantly from South County, they have different tastes that you can ascertain?
No. It's so difficult because we're such a mixed bag of,
okay,
things.
Yeah.
You know, even if it were just one genre and it was just music, I would say it would be easier to judge that. But we're always scrambling. We're looking at all of the, you know, figures and the numbers. And it's really remarkable that it's
so inconsistent.
It is. So, and it's what we wanted. We, yeah, wanted it to be like here. We wanted to be able to say we are the most diverse programming in the Berkshires.
Yeah.
And I'm sure some will argue, but some would say, yeah, probably pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. David, how about you? Have, over the years, and you've done Christmas Carol and all of that, can you say this show is for a Pittsfield audience or this show is a North County audience?
Well, I'd actually put it slightly.
Among the three of us.
It's a very interesting question. I mean, Christmas Carol is definitely more of a local audience. We also have mostly local actors in it,
yeah,
so that has its own appeal.
Coming to see their friends.
Yes, but I will say that we have the Unicorn Stage in Stockbridge, and
right,
then we have the Colonial, and we do see a slight difference sometimes between those two audiences, but we're also programming them slightly differently too, because for one, they are very different spaces.
Right.
So our small Unicorn Stage, which is very intimate, I mean, it's my favorite theater in the Berkshires. You know, we tend to have the edgier,
yeah,
more interesting.
No, that's not true.
I don't mean that
that's
at all.
Not true.
The things that are of interest to a different group of people. And so, for instance, we have a big show that's going to appeal to a larger, a very large audience for The Mousetrap.
Mm-hmm.
So that will have an appeal, and because of the nature of The Mousetrap, it will fit into the Colonial in a way that's really wonderful.
Yeah. So, Amy, we were talking about audiences before and artistic response, back to the topic a little bit. Have you heard from any audience members saying, why aren't you, do you know what's going on? Why aren't you?
No.
No? Even among donors? And
no. Everyone is appreciative of the variety of what we offer, so that there's always something, and they're like, I feel like going out, let's see what's playing at the Foundry. And that week there's even like,
so people
things.
Aren't communicating with you that there's a situation in the world, why aren't you?
No,
fill
because
the blanks.
Cause I think they think that we are
okay
addressing it. I mean, even last weekend the Humanist Project brought a Crucible, mm-hmm. which was a very deconstructed and reworked
yes.
version of the Crucible with clowns.
There were turkeys involved.
And there were a couple of Shake and Co. Alum and actors, and they were wonderful. And the play was very funny because they were clowns, but it also addressed some very serious issues.
Yeah.
And so it really held the whole evening, and the audience was packed, and they jumped to their feet screaming and clapping mm-hmm. at the end, because I think they felt like it spoke to all of them.
Yeah. How about you, David? Any communication from, how about educators? Are you hearing more different things from the teachers you work with and the schools that you work with, because they're really in the crosshairs too at this moment?
Not directly to the shows that we're putting on.
Yeah.
I think the schools are stressed. I mean, there's a lot going on in them, and you know, being a teacher isn't easy these days. I was just at a school. Our tour was in Chicopee, and someone said that they'd lost two teachers recently who had transferred out of the area. And I knew what that meant. It just meant that, you know, that our school systems, all school systems, I'm guessing, in all states, are stressed. And that has an impact, and it has to have an impact on the kids.
Yeah. What about educators? Are they
stressed?
How do they communicate that to you?
I think people say I'm tired. You know, I think our teachers need more support. They absolutely need more support, and it's just a fact. Being a teacher is not. It's never been an easy job, first of all, and it's not any easier in this day and age.
Yeah.
And you know, you always hear about teachers who have second jobs.
Yeah.
So. That's not good.
Yeah. How about personally, Amy, do you have personal fears being in the genre you're in? Do you ever feel threatened?
I don't.
In
I feel
any
like
way?
I feel like there's so many groups of human beings that are feeling so threatened right now. I feel privileged. I've always felt privileged. I'm a white woman. I'm an older group. I won't say how old. And, you know, I have two queer children. We support them, my husband and I, 100%, as one would for their kids. They're also both artists. I don't know mm-hmm. how I really feel about that, but one's a filmmaker and one's a musician, and they're both living in New York City.
Yeah.
So do I fear for them sometimes? Yes.
Why don't you hold that thought, because we're going to take a little bit of a break, and then we'll be back with a lot more of Morning Drive. My guests are David Atkins from the Berkshire Theater Group and Amy Brentano from the Foundry in West Stockbridge. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield. 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, UCPWMA.org/jobs. Eatsa Pizza is back. Join PCTV and WTBR for the biggest and tastiest pizza event around, May 15th at Berkshire Hills Country Club on Benedict Road in Pittsfield. Enjoy pizza from Shire Tavern, The Locker Room, and much more. And you get to decide who will win the People's Choice Award. Pizza Pizza at Berkshire Hills Country Club on May 15th. Tickets are $20 for adults and $10 for children 12 and under in advance. Get your tickets now at pittsfieldtv.org/pizza. Support for Eats a Pizza comes from Cohen, Kinney, Valicenti, and Cook.
Wonder what happened to those great local PCTV channels? Did you lose them? No worries, they're still there. Go to cable channels 1301, 1302, and 1303 to watch the best local content on television. News and information, sports and entertainment, city council, school committee, July 4th parade. It's all there waiting for you. Pittsfield Community Television. For over 30 years, we are still your local television.
Let's take a moment to talk about your wellness. Financial wellness, that is.
Go through the process of making a monthly budget. Even if it's not perfect, it's good to be aware of your financial health.
When shopping for insurance, ask your agent to shop around for you and see if you can bundle your policies.
This money hack brought to you by your neighbors at Greylock Federal Credit Union. All financial education and coaching resources are free and open to the public. Greylock Federal Credit Union, insured by NCUA.
Join Peter and Jessica to relive the magic of Beatlemania every Tuesday from 4 to 6 p.m. For 5 decades, the Fab Four, where together or on their own, has changed the world of music. Tune in to Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 FM, Tuesdays, 4 to 6 p.m.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at Sondrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back. WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Ellen Speer, and you're listening to Morning Drive. We appreciate your being with us this morning. Two wonderful guests, Amy Brentano, who is the producing artistic director of The Foundry in West Stockbridge, and David Atkins, who is the artistic director of education and training at Berkshire Theater Group. Thank you for being with us. And we're having a wide-ranging discussion about the artistic response to our times. Arts and artists have always been in the forefront of holding up a mirror a little bit to what's going on in the world and helping us understand and sort it out. And I'd like to kind of move us to that side of things. And David, we'll start with you. How does the art that you work with theater, help us understand what's going on, find our place in the world, and help us stay grounded?
Well, as you said, what we do is hold a mirror up to ourselves, and any time self-expression seems to me it should be a fundamental right. And artists through time have risked themselves by exploring themselves, and that's part of the mission. I certainly, for what we do, bringing stories where people look at themselves, hold a mirror up to themselves. And what I find is what sticks out for me, mm-hmm. is that the human experience is held up into the light, and we can move forward. Often stories are about looking at a problem, the protagonist has a problem, fixes it, and moves forward in life. And I think that's as a fundamental story, is a way for art in turbulent times. So I think the human experience and seeing the beauty of the human spirit is what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Amy, how about you?
Well, here's my 2-minute speech.
Okay.
So I wanted
You've
to
practiced this, have you?
I wanted to, no, I really believe this. I wanted to start a venue where, maybe I come out and introduce things, and then I never say, so sit back and enjoy the show, or relax. I want you to sit on the edge of your seat. And I think that we live in such divided times, and fear has been instilled through media, through whatever, and whatever your politics are. Fear is out there and prominent, and fear is about not understanding the unknown. So can we put something on stage, whether it be through music or dance or improv or especially comedy? Comedy is such a great way to break down barriers so that when you leave, you're looking at the world through a different lens. So something in you has shifted, and you may not even know it intellectually. Maybe it's emotionally, or maybe it's just in the way that your hair stood up on your arms.
So how does comedy break down barriers exactly?
Because comedy will take you by surprise sometimes, especially if it's, for instance, I've been working with Second Street Second Chances with previously incarcerated individuals, and my colleague Sarah Katzoff and I've donated space at the Foundry to create devised theater about these traumatic, often traumatic.
What's devised theater?
Devised theater is theater that you create as a collaborative. It's not like that there's a playwright over here.
A bunch of people get together
and
make a story.
Create it. So we created it from interviews with these previously incarcerated individuals who often were in recovery. They dealt with addiction. And we brought these stories to Berkshire Community College stage. But we had not only the people from the previously incarcerated community, but donors and people from all walks of life. And it's so easy in a very tragic piece to sit back and go, well, thank God that's not me. I feel so good about my life. And our goal was to crack that wall. And we did it with humor as well as with the tragedy of mm-hmm. these people's lives that were so honest by saying, well, that could be me. Perhaps if I had just stepped one step that way, perhaps I would have had a different path in my life that would have been full of a lot more trauma and sadness. And so I think that no matter what we're doing in the performing arts, we all can know that it's a very powerful medium for bringing people together.
David, what Amy just said, I hear her talking about empathy.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and that's when, Amy and I were talking briefly about being educators, and having kids learn about empathy is, for me, one of the most important aspects of theater training, besides all the teamwork and communication skills and all of that. But I really liked what Amy said, and it's really important because we come in, as humans, we're thinkers and dreamers, and we come into the theater often thinking one way, and the power of theater and all forms of art is that it has the power and the possibility of asking the viewer questions. And I think that's what, you might not come out thinking differently or knowing that you think differently, but just asking the questions is important. And often people can come out with a different perspective than they went into the theater with.
Yeah. Amy, I'm on the spot a little bit, so I'll talk slowly so you can think about your answer on this one. But have you ever a recent performance where you really felt like, yeah, they get it? Where the audience reaction and just the feeling in the room tells you, you were talking about your, all I remember is turkeys, but your recent
blabbering. Yes. Well, I mean, sometimes you'll hear audibly an audience as like almost as a rehearsed choral response, like, oh, yeah, or a sigh or hysterical laughter. Sometimes we will do talkbacks. I often find like they're not very well facilitated, so they get really, they go down a weird rabbit hole. But when they are well facilitated and you hear from audience members, you hear things like, I never really thought about that, and I'm going to leave thinking about this, or that image resonated with me. For some reason, it reminded me of something in my childhood. So they do, and then they do respond after because our venue is so small that I'm standing there, going, thank you so much for coming. We really appreciate you coming. Yeah. And then we get feedback back then,
How about you, David? Have you a performance you can remember in recent memory where you go, we did it. They get it.
I absolutely do. Just this past weekend in our production of Matilda. You know, Matilda is about this little girl and her classmates who rise up against a power that doesn't have their best interest at heart.
Yeah, how did you... I'll get back to that.
And We Are Revolting Children is in the second act. And we had children, you know, flowing down the aisles and up in the boxes. And... we had the whole audience standing up and clapping to the music with We Are Revolting Children. And I thought that I was just so moved because now are people thinking, oh, we're rising up against the evil powers that are outside these theater walls. Maybe not, but there's something inside that there was a chord that we struck. And it was impressive and awe-inspiring.
Yeah. So when was this programmed? Because it's a wonderful coincidence.
Weekend.
I mean, when did you decide to do it and put it on stage at this time?
Well, it's very interesting that you ask. when I first became the artistic director of education and training, though I'd been at the theater in other capacities for years, Kathy Jo Grover, who is one of my colleagues and who co-directed with me, and choreographed. When I came in, I said, would you give me a list of plays that you would like to do? And she said, Matilda. And that was 2 years
that
ago.
That was the list?
Yeah, she said, I'd like to do Matilda. And of course, she is interested in other things, but that was really high up on her list. And all of the pieces kind of came together this year, and I thought, wow, this really works for right now.
Yeah. Let me ask another question. Were the kids getting it? Were the kids... relating to now or just relating to rebellion because you're 12?
I think relating to rebellion because they're 12. I did have some of the older kids in high school would talk a little bit about what's going on, but I don't feel that that's my responsibility in that setting.
What do you mean?
Well, I think, you know, we have third graders through 12th graders in a rehearsal room. So I let the work speak for itself and impact them in the positive ways that we all want that kind of theater experience to do.
Yeah. Amy, is there a particular genre that is resonating right now? Are people gravitating more to music or they want theater? And I know it's hard because you have such a range of things. Have you noticed any particular audience? You know, because I'm really speaking to the uplifting part where everybody needs a good laugh these days and everybody needs to get a little distance. Are you noticing there's a particular genre that delivers that better than any other? And it may not be, but...
I don't know. I have a theater background, and I believe in the metaphor that theater offers, and the storyline and the narrative that pulls you in. But you know, music can do the same thing. We had this quartet from Rotterdam that played tango, and there were a lot of audience members who'd never heard tango played before, and it was just infectious, and just felt like everyone can come together, not through words, but through the sound, and that was, they all left just beaming smiles, so. Mm-hmm.
David, did you do any curtain speeches before Matilda, or you did curtain speeches before?
Yes, definitely.
So put you on the spot a little bit.
Sure.
Do you think there's particular responsibility in this day and age for whoever's giving a curtain speech to say something related to the importance of the arts and that they're a little under fire? Or,
Well, I will admit that in the curtain speech that I just gave, we do remind audiences that only ticket sales only cover 50% of what we do. I'm mixed on curtain speeches, quite frankly. I don't know that I've ever put it into words. First of all, when someone like Kate McGuire comes out and gives a curtain speech, because she is so impassioned and so knowledgeable, she speaks to the audience quickly and succinctly, and when she leaves, you know that she is really passionate about what we do and that she cares about theater and she cares about the impact that theater has in our community, regionally, and in the world. When you listen to that kind of a curtain speech, I'm all for it. When someone comes out and gives you, you know, says only, you know, ticket sales only cover 50% of our of what we do here, and the exits are in the
over there,
brightly
over there.
Green lit signs. I mean, that's something else. So I can go both ways.
And the other way is,
well, I mean, people do have to be told where the exits are, but
right.
I'm hesitant to hit people over the head with we need your support. They're in the theater, so they're already supporting us.
Yeah.
I think reminding people, I mean, it helps. I will say that. I put out a little video at the beginning of the year. I'm trying to build out our marketing, not our marketing, but our Instagram feed. And I did put out a little video that basically said, we depend on people like you, and we got a lot of hits.
Yeah. Well, do you ever think that it's an artist's responsibility in this day and age to say what's happening to the arts right now and the cutbacks or funding are not okay?
Sure. I think that's okay. I think it also depends on the situation. I mean, look, I'm all for artists getting in people's faces about all kinds of things if it's done in an artistic way and in a way that doesn't, I mean, I would say doesn't offend people. But I think challenging people's sensibilities is important.
Mm-hmm.
And there are various venues for that. But it's not necessarily in every venue at every performance.
How about you, Amy? Do you do curtain speeches?
I welcome everybody because I like to think of myself as Ellen Stewart at La Mama, even though I don't have the right dashiki captain.
Yes.
But we do have a spiral staircase. No, I'm kidding. I do welcome everyone because it's part of the culture. I don't like having to make curtain speeches because I don't think the foundry is me. It was an idea, but it's really the supporters that support it and the artists that fill it that make it special. But it is kind of important to show a face. And I will, if I go out there and I'm not extremely upbeat, I will be called out by my staff. They'll be like, it's like you were announcing, you know, one of the world's horrible tragedies or something tonight. You can't ever do that again. So I try to thank everyone for just coming together and appreciating the live arts.
So you avoid what's happening now is not okay?
At the moment, because most of our programming addresses it in some one way or another, and it's good that you're asking because it's something we struggle with. Even like on our landing page of our website or
right.
on our, we have a very active social media.
Yeah,
and I do think that we try to put it out there explicitly in a positive way that the live arts actually bring people together in a space to experience something, and we may not all have the same views. And so we will put something like that out there as opposed to saying, these are what our politics are. We've been doing these community potlucks at the Foundry that are so well attended, and I just couldn't believe how, and sing-alongs.
Yeah.
Sing-alongs.
Yeah. Well, what about David? What about things where other artists working in your genre, like what's happening at the Kennedy Center and that's happening, do you feel some responsibility to connect to that and to say how you feel about that publicly? I'm putting you on the spot.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, look, I'm all for, I'm all for fighting for what I believe in. And I've never been afraid to do so. But I do think that there are places that it's more effective and will be heard. And so I think selecting with that in mind is what I will do. I'm happy to go to a protest. Do I need to put that into, I mean, the theater brings all kinds of people together. And I think that communal spirit is, as Amy says, or not to misquote you, but often the material is its own voice, and yeah. you don't have to add something necessarily on top of it.
Yeah. Amy, you feel the same way?
I do. No, I do feel the same way. I feel like we did a show called Censored, and it was by Carolyn Brancato, a playwright. We just did a reading of it, and two times we did it because it was packed both times with people finding that in sort of the history of censorship and where we are right now. I think that people are interested in what's happening, no matter what their politics are. They know that this is a very different time than we've had in the yeah. at least in my lifetime. And now I'm saying I am very old.
No.
But it's a different time, and the dialogue comes up whether the person standing in front brings it up
yeah.
or not, I
yeah.
think.
Okay. Let's talk about funding again, and sort of fact-based, because there's a lot of fear-based stuff, and I'd rather get to, you know, some fact-based stuff. David, can you tell us roughly what percentage of Berkshire Theatre Group might be federally funded?
I don't know. I actually do not know the answer to that.
Through grants and things like that?
I really don't. I know that we depend on grants,
yeah.
and that if they were to be lost, that it would hurt.
Because the same would be true of foundations, because they work on 3-year rolling averages. So 3 years from now,
exactly,
it'll reflect when the market tanked, and you all will start to feel that then.
Exactly. And I think that's what I mean by people feeling tentative and wondering about what's coming. I mean, the whole thing with NPR today.
And, yes, and
you know,
PBS and CPB.
Exactly. So.
For our listeners who may not know, today there was an executive order signed asking Corporation for Public Broadcasting to stop sending funds to NPR and PBS.
Right. So, yes, that's, you know, an email went out saying that, you know, the 21st century funding, which is after-school programming, out-of-school programming for kids in our area, well, wherever 21st century is,
yes.
Is at risk. Does that mean those programs won't happen? The one thing I do know is that artists tend to be resilient, but it is scary to think
yeah.
that a lot of this funding is going to disappear or decline for a while.
Yeah. So resilience, Amy. If funding declines and changes, first of all, do you know what percentage do you take federal funds in, from grants, state grants?
We're not a nonprofit. We don't. And there was a reason why we did that, and I'm glad that we did it right now.
Right.
Just our mere existence is an act of resistance. That's just how I personally feel in the place, because we own the building.
Mm-hmm.
Our overhead is. Manageable to an extent. I mean, all prices are going up on everything. Our flood insurance like tripled this year because the Williams River is so big. But I mean,
yes.
When it hits nationally, it hits
sure.
all over the place. And
sure.
So overhead is going up, and the tariffs make a difference. And but we did not shut down during COVID because we could afford the building, and we did live streams. We couldn't afford to shut down because it was only our second year.
Right.
We literally shut down to the date a year from when we opened. And so we gave artists platforms, and then we could open up outside, and we were small enough that we could afford
yeah.
to do that. But we're just watching but going forward at a rapid speed and trying to keep churning it out, because the minute we go dark is the minute we disappear.
Yeah. So you talked about resilience a little bit, and is for-profit a good model for
No, it's
theaters?
Horrible. I didn't say it was working. We had a very, some colleagues and I who were trying to start the nonprofit, at least a section of it, had a very, very enlightening conversation with a small but very well-established off-Broadway theater in New York City. We had a Zoom. And the artistic director was very kind and generous, and we were talking about how we were on the balance beam for trying to figure out whether we were going nonprofit. And he said, listen, places like yours have to still exist, because places like ours that have been in existence for over 50 years, we're off-Broadway, so we're
manageable, but we're going to have to change our programming and adjust so that we can survive. And we need places like you up there so we can do residencies and we can have space that's outside of the city that's so expensive. And it was really uplifting to hear that we're not doing something in a vacuum. We're doing something that's really important for artists to be able to come up to a less expensive place. We can house them, we can feed them, and give them space to create their work without relying on federal funding.
Right. Well, David, when you've got more reliance on individuals or foundations, have you found in your career, how does that change the dialogue? You're not having a dialogue with the feds, you're having a dialogue with your donors, and have over your career, have they been more or less vocal, and how do you navigate those conversations?
Well, I can tell you this. The funders that I have spoken to have never asked anything particular in terms of the content. I mean, in terms of education, they sometimes have rules for where they would like their money to be spent specifically.
Oh, of course,
but it never has anything to do with content. Now, I'm not dealing with the donors that Kate McGuire is. I know that she was down in Florida recently speaking to a number of donors, and I was not privy to those conversations. But I think the political climate, is a factor.
Yeah. What are the opportunities here from having to be close as you are to your audience, of having to navigate in this environment? There must be opportunity here.
Because of the intimacy of the space?
And the chaos in the world.
I mean, the opportunity is that, well, for one thing, if you come to the Foundry and you like what you see and you recognize the value to the community, you feel a little ownership of it. You really feel ownership of it. And some of those people have the funds to donate and they don't care if it's a tax write-off. They just believe in it being there. And some of them are subscribers and they donate like $40 a month and they can come see anything they want for free, which is, I will stand by, the best deal in Berkshire. Yeah. But,
so what are the artistic opportunities too, and for your organization?
I think to develop new work, to develop cutting edge new work and then put it out into the world to larger regional theaters or to fringe festivals that are always looking for solo pieces. Like, places are looking for things for years. It's been happening in regional theaters that are less expensive to present. I mean, Broadway is ridiculously expensive with all of the production value. So we offer a very minimal production value, but it's a very upfront experience.
And these times bring something else to it or not? These times...
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you look back in theater history, under the most autocratic and oppressive regimes is when the most extraordinary work happened, be it, you know, in concentration camps during World War II, the music that came out of that, or the writing. And so I don't want to equate that's where we are. A lot of people feel like that's where we're headed, but I think that it's motivating for people.
Yeah. How about you, David? What are the opportunities in an environment like this, in kind of a hothouse, in a pressurized situation for art, for theater education?
Well, I agree with Amy. I think there's always an opportunity with trying to foster new work. We have playwrights in residence right now from New York City, and they're working away on their plays. We're not asking them really what they're... We don't say, what are you going to write? We offer them a place to come and do their work, and the hope is that they will be able to take that work and, who knows, maybe it might get done at BTG, or they take it elsewhere. But I think giving people the opportunity to do new work is vitally important. We have playwriting classes that we take into the schools. I think giving children the opportunities to tell their stories and to give them voice is vitally important at any time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as Amy touched on, trying times tend to foster very important ideas.
Right. So we will look forward to some wonderful new work in a couple of years that are coming from both of your institutions. We're at the end of our time. Interesting conversation with Amy Brentano of the Foundry in West Stockbridge and David Atkins of the Berkshire Theater Group right here in Pittsfield. Thank you both so much for coming and sharing your thoughts this morning.